Chapter 35 Avasarala. On the screen, the young man laughed as he had laughed 25 seconds earlier on Earth. It was the level of lag Avasarala hated the most. Too much for the conversation to feel anything like normal, but not quite enough to make it impossible. Everything she did took too long. Every reading of reaction and nuance, crippled by the effort to guess what exactly in her words and expression 10 seconds before had elicited it. "Only you," he said, "could take another Earth-Mars war, turn it into a private cruise, and then seem pissed off about it. Anyone in my office would give their left testicle to go with you. Next time I'll take up a collection. But, as far as an accurate military inventory," he said, 25 seconds ago, "there are reports in place, but they're not as good as I'd like. Because it's you, I've got a couple of my interns building search parameters. My impression is that the research budget is about a tenth of the money going to actual research. With your clearances, I have rights to look at it, but these Navy guys are pretty good at obscuring things. I think you'll find..." His expression clouded. "A collection? Forget it, you are saying?" She waited 50 seconds, resenting each individually. "I don't know that we'll be able to get a definitive answer," the young man said. "We might get lucky, but if it's something they want to hide, they can probably hide it. Especially since they'll know you're looking for it, and what I asked you to look for," Avasarala thought. Even if the income stream between Mao Kukowski, Nguyen, and Ehrenreich was in all the budgets right now, by the time Avasarala's allies looked, it would be hidden. All she could do was keep pushing on as many fronts as she could devise, and hope that they fucked up. 3 more days of information requests and queries, and she could ask for traffic analysis. She couldn't know exactly what information they were hiding, but if she could find out what kinds and categories of data they were keeping away from her, that would tell her something. Something, but not much. "Do what you can," she said. "I'll luxuriate out here in the middle of nowhere. Get back to me." She didn't wait 50 seconds for a round of etiquette and farewell. Life was too short for that shit. Her private quarters on the Guanxi Yin were gorgeous. The bed and couch matched the deep carpet in tones of gold and green that should have clashed but didn't. The light was the best approximation of mid-morning sunlight that she'd ever seen, and the air recyclers were scented to give everything just a note of turned earth and fresh-cut grass. Only the low-thrust gravity spoiled the illusion of being in a private country club somewhere in the green belt of South Asia. The low gravity and the goddamn lag. She hated low gravity. Even if the acceleration were perfectly smooth and the yacht never had to shift or move to avoid debris, her guts were used to a full G pulling things down. She hadn't digested anything well since she'd come on board, and she always felt short of breath. Her system chimed. A new report from Venus. She popped it open. The preliminary analysis of the wreckage from the Arbogast was underway. There was some ionizing in the metal that was apparently consistent with someone's theory of how the protomolecule functioned. It was the first time a prediction had been confirmed, the first tiny toehold toward a genuine understanding of what was happening on Venus. There was an exact timing of the 3 energy spikes. There was a spectral analysis of the upper atmosphere of Venus that showed more elemental nitrogen than expected. Avasarala felt her eyes glazing over. The truth was, she didn't care. She should. It was important, possibly more important than anything else that was happening. But just like Ehrenreich and Nguyen and all the others, she was caught up in this smaller human struggle of war and influence, and the tribal division between Earth and Mars. The outer planets, too, if you took them seriously. Hell, at this point, she was more worried about Bobby and Kotyar than she was about Venus. Kotyar was a good man, and his disapproval left her feeling defensive and pissed off. And Bobby looked like she was about to crack. And why not? The woman had watched her friends die around her, had been stripped of her context, and was now working for her traditional enemy. The Marine was tough, in more ways than one, and having someone on the team with no allegiance or ties to anyone on Earth was a real benefit, especially after fucking Sorin. She leaned back in her chair, unnerved by how different it felt when she weighed so little. Sorin still smarted. Not the betrayal itself. Betrayal was an occupational hazard. If she started getting her feelings hurt by that, she really should retire. No, it was that she hadn't seen it. She'd let herself have a blind spot, and Ehrenreich had known how to use it, how to disenfranchise her. She hated being outplayed. And more than that, she hated that her failure was going to mean more war, more violence, more children dying. That was the price for screwing up. More dead children. So she wouldn't screw up anymore. She could practically see Arjun, the gentle sorrow in his eyes. "It isn't all your responsibility," he would say. "It's everyone's fucking responsibility," she said out loud. "But I'm the one who's taking it seriously." She smiled. Let Mao's monitors and spies make sense of that. She let herself imagine them searching her room for some other transmission device, trying to find who she'd been speaking to. Or they just think the old lady was losing her beans. Let him wonder. She closed out the Venus report. Another message had arrived while she was in her reverie, flagged as an issue she'd requested follow-up on. When she read the intelligence summary, her eyebrows rose. "I'm James Holden, and I'm here to ask for your help." Avasarala watched Bobby watching the screen. She looked exhausted and restless both. Her eyes weren't bloodshot so much as dry-looking, like bearings without enough grease. If she'd needed an example to demonstrate the difference between sleepy and tired, it would have been the Marine. "So he got out then," Bobby said. "Him and his pet botanist and the whole damn crew," Avasarala said. "So now we have one story about what they were doing on Ganymede that got your boys and ours so excited they started shooting each other." Bobby looked up at her. "Do you think it's true?" "What is truth?" Avasarala said. "I think Holden has a long history of blabbing whatever he knows or thinks he knows all over creation. True or not, he believes it." "And the part about the protomolecule? I mean, he just told everyone that the protomolecule is loose on Ganymede." "He did?" "People have got to be reacting to that, right?" Avasarala flipped to the intelligence summary, then to feeds of the riots on Ganymede. Thin, frightened people, exhausted by tragedy and war and fueled by panic. She could tell that the security forces arrayed against them were trying to be gentle. These weren't thugs enjoying the use of force. These were orderlies, trying to keep the frail and dying from hurting themselves and each other, walking the line between necessary violence and ineffectiveness. 50 dead so far," Avasarala said. "That's the estimate, anyway. That place is so ass-fucked right now, they might have been going to die of sickness and malnutrition anyway, but they died of this instead." "I went to that restaurant," Bobby said. Avasarala frowned, trying to make it into a metaphor for something. Bobby pointed at the screen. "The one they're dying in front of? I ate there just after I arrived at the deployment. They had good sausage." "Sorry," Avasarala said. But the Marine only shook her head. "So, that cat's out of the bag," she said. "Maybe," Avasarala said. "Maybe not. James Holden just told the whole system that the protomolecule's on Ganymede. In what universe is that maybe not?" Avasarala pulled up a mainstream newsfeed, checked the flags, and pulled the one with the listed expert she wanted. The data buffered for a few seconds while she lifted her finger for patience. "Totally irresponsible," a grave-cheeked man in a lab coat and kufi cap said. The contempt in his voice could have peeled paint. The interviewer appeared beside him. She was maybe 20 years old, with hair cut short and straight, and a dark suit that said she was a serious journalist. "So you're saying the protomolecule isn't involved?" "It isn't. The images James Holden and his little group are sending have nothing to do with the protomolecule. That webbing is what happens when you have a binding agent leak. It happens all the time. So there isn't any reason to panic." "Alice," the expert said, turning his condescension to the interviewer, "within a few days of exposure, Eros was a living horror show. In the time since hostilities opened, Ganymede hasn't shown one sign of a live infection, not one." "But he has a scientist with him, the botanist Dr. Praxidiki Mung, whose daughter..." "I don't know this Mung fellow, but playing with a few soybeans makes him as much an expert on the protomolecule as it makes him a brain surgeon. I'm very sorry, of course, about his missing daughter, but no, if the protomolecule were on Ganymede, we'd have known long ago. This panic is over literally nothing." "He can go on like that for hours," Avasarala said, shutting down the screen. "And we have dozens like him. Mars is going to be doing the same thing, saturating the news feeds with a counter-story." "Impressive," Bobby said, pushing herself back from the desk. "It keeps people calm. That's the important thing. Holden thinks he's a hero. Power to the people. Information wants to be free, blah, blah, blah. But he's a fucking moron."
"He's on his own ship."
Avasarala crossed her arms.
"What's your point?"
"He's on his own ship, and we're not."
"So we're all fucking morons," Avasarala said. "Fine."
Bobby stood up and started pacing the room. She turned well before she reached the wall. The woman was used to pacing in smaller quarters.
"What do you want me to do about it?" Bobby asked.
"Nothing," Avasarala said.
"What the hell could you do about it? You're stuck out here with me. I can hardly do anything, and I've got friends in high places. You've got nothing. I only wanted to talk to someone. I didn't have to wait 2 minutes to let interrupt me."
She'd taken it too far. Bobby's expression eased, went calm and closed and distant. She was shutting down. Avasarala lowered herself to the edge of the bed.
"That wasn't fair," Avasarala said.
"If you say so."
"I fucking say so."
The Marine tilted her head.
"Was that an apology?"
"As close to one as I'm giving right now."
Something shifted in Avasarala's mind. Not about Venus, or James Holden, and his poor, lost girl appeal, or even Ehrenreich. It had to do with Bobby and her pacing and her sleeplessness. Then she got it, and laughed once mirthlessly. Bobby crossed her arms, her steady silence a question.
"It isn't funny," Avasarala said.
"Try me."
"You remind me of my daughter."
"Yeah?" She'd pissed Bobby off, and now she was going to have to explain herself. The air recyclers hummed to themselves. Something far off in the bowels of the yacht groaned like they were on an ancient sailing ship made from timber and tar.
"My son died when he was 15, Avasarala said. "Skiing. Did I tell you this? He was on a slope that he'd run 20, 30 times before. He knew it. But something happened, and he ran into a tree. They guessed he was going something like 60 kilometers an hour when he hit. Some people survive an impact like that, but not him."
For a moment, she was there again, in the house with the medic on the screen giving her the news. She could still smell the incense Arjun had been burning at the time. She could still hear the raindrops against the window, tapping like fingertips. It was the worst memory she had, and it was perfect and clear. She took a long, deep, shuddering breath.
"I almost got divorced 3 times in the next 6 months. Arjun was a saint, but saints have their limits. We fought about anything, about nothing. Each of us blamed ourselves for not saving Charanpal, and we resented it when the other one tried to take some responsibility. and so, of course, my daughter suffered the worst. There was a night when we were out at something, Arjun and I. We got home late, and we'd been fighting. Ashanti was in the kitchen, washing dishes, washing clean dishes by hand, scrubbing them with a cloth and this terrible abrasive cleanser. Her fingers were bleeding, but she didn't seem to notice, you know. I tried to stop her, pull her away, but she started screaming, and she wouldn't be quiet until I let her resume her washing. I was so angry I couldn't see. I hated my daughter. For that moment, I hated her.
And I remind you of her how, exactly?
Avasarala gestured to the room. Its bed with real linen sheets. The textured paper on the walls, the scented air. You can't compromise. You can't see things the way I tell you that they are. And when I try and make you, you go away.
Is that what you want? Bobby said.
Her voice was crawling up to a higher energy level. It was anger, but it brought her back to being present.
You want me to agree with whatever you say, and if I don't, you're going to hate me for it?
Of course I want you to call me on my bullshit. That's what I pay you for. I'm only going to hate you for the moment, Avasarala said. I love my daughter very much.
I'm sure you do, ma'am. I'm not her.
Avasarala sighed. I didn't call you in here and show you all of this because I was tired of the lag. I'm worried. Fuck it, I'm scared.
About what? You want a list?
Bobby actually smiled. Avasarala felt herself smiling back. I'm scared that I've been outplayed already, she said. I'm afraid that I won't be able to stop the hawks and the cabal from using their pretty new toys. And I'm afraid that I might be wrong. What happens, Bobby? What happens if whatever the hell that is on Venus rises up and finds us as divided and screwed up and ineffective as we are right now?
I don't know.
Avasarala's terminal chimed. She glanced at the new message. A note from Admiral Souther. Avasarala had sent him an utterly innocuous note about having lunch when they both got back to Earth, then coded it for high security clearance with a private encryption schema. It would take her handlers a couple of hours at least to crack it. She tabbed it open. The reply was plain text. Love to. The eagle lands at midnight. Petting zoos are illegal in Rome. Avasarala laughed. It was real pleasure this time. Bobby loomed up over her shoulder, and Avasarala turned the screen so that the big marine could peer down at it.
What's that mean?
Avasarala motioned her down close enough that her lips were almost against Bobby's ear. At that intimate distance, the big woman smelled of clean sweat and the cucumber-scented emollient that was in all Mao's guest quarters.
Nothing, Avasarala whispered. He's just following my lead. But they'll chew their livers out guessing at it.
Bobby stood up. Her expression of incredulity was eloquent. This really is how government works, isn't it?
Welcome to the monkey house, Avasarala said.
I think I might go get drunk.
And I'll get back to work.
At the doorway, Bobby paused. She looked small in the wide frame. The doorframe on a spaceship that left Roberta Draper looking small. There was nothing about the yacht that wasn't tastefully obscene.
So what happened with her?
Who?
Your daughter.
Avasarala closed her terminal. Arjun sang to her until she stopped. It took about 3 hours. He sat on the counter and went through all the songs we'd sung to them when they were little. Eventually, Ashanti let him lead her to her room and tuck her into bed.
You hated him, too, didn't you? For being able to help her when you couldn't.
You're catching on, Sergeant.
Bobby licked her lips.
I want to hurt someone, she said. I'm afraid if it's not them, it's going to wind up being me.
We all grieve in our own ways, Avasarala said.
For what it's worth, you'll never kill enough people to keep your platoon from dying. No more than I can save enough people that one of them will be Charenpal. For a long moment, Bobby weighed the words. Avasarala could almost hear the woman's mind turning the ideas one way and then another. Sarin had been an idiot to underestimate this woman. But Sarin had been an idiot in a lot of ways. When at length she spoke, her voice was light and conversational, as if her words weren't profound. No harm trying, though. It's what we do, Avasarala said. The Marine nodded curtly. For a moment, Avasarala thought she might be going to salute, but instead she lumbered out toward the complimentary bar in the wide common area. There was a fountain out there with sprays of water drifting down fake bronze sculptures of horses and underdressed women. If that didn't make someone want a stiff drink of something, then nothing would. Avasarala thumbed on the video feed again. This is James Holden. She turned it off again. At least you lost that fucking beard, she said to no one.